Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
All right, family, we're joined by Tari Saichiduku, speaking to us about the goal of early education. Now, early childhood education, or early childhood rather, is the period from birth to around 8 years old when a child's brain is particularly receptive to learning from their environment. And this is the period that is important for growth, and special education methods are needed to help the children to develop important skills and basic knowledge for their future. A good early childhood education gives children many academic and emotional benefits that last years, and this is at the center of today's conversation. Tari Sai, hello, good evening, afternoon. I'm not sure what the time is, where you are. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks.
I'm glad.
How are you?
I'm good. It's been a long day. I'm just messing up. I'm pressing every button at the same time. Yo, the Lord knows my heart. My heart isn't the right
place. Amen.
The Lord knows my heart is in the right place. But let's get straight into this conversation. Okay, so we're talking about early education and what the goal even is. I was saying earlier to the listeners that sometimes I think we look at early education more, or early childhood development, we look at it as a nice to have, and look at it as glorified babysitters or things like that. But what exactly is the goal of early education? But before we do that, let's start with the long-term benefits of early education.
Wow, it gives children life skills. Montessori says the job of the child is to create the man. So it's just preparing the child to become who they're going to be in future. So, for example, learning to talk to people, learning to be friendly. They learn that when they're little children, not when they become adults or parents.
Right.
So it's preparing for the adult, yeah, for adult life.
I love that. So the emphasis then is not simply on keeping a child busy, but actually the fact that you're looking into the future, into who this person could potentially become.
Yes, exactly. That's it. Spot on. In simple terms, that's it.
Love that. Now, getting more specific then, how does early childhood education support specifically cognitive development?
Those early experiences, Montessori again, speaks of sensitive periods, at the optimal time to learn something. I love the example of language, because there's a very strong link between language and cognitive development. Mm-hmm. There's an example of this boy, the wild boy of Aviron. He grew up in the wild, mm-hmm. and he had no one to talk to. Okay. And by the time he was brought into society and he was around people, he still could not speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did speak, but not as, you know, like you'd expect a person to speak.
Right.
Because he had been in the wild for so long and he missed that sensitive period.
Mm.
So with cognitive development, just being able to develop, to cultivate the mind, to learn, to cultivate that curiosity, it's essential to do that in the early years.
Okay.
To develop, to cultivate that love of education, of just knowing things. Sure. It starts in early childhood.
Now, I'm already feeling guilty because I'm thinking about the mothers out there. I am the mothers out there. Who, you know, sometimes when you see that this child is so curious about a lot of stuff, that's great, that's wonderful. But a lot of times, if we are tired or life is just lifing during that period and we really don't have the interest or the same curiosity, we don't share that same enthusiasm and curiosity. So we really just want to leave it to the teacher. But what you're saying is that the importance of it would require that all of us then get involved.
Yes. 100%. Parents need to collaborate with teachers, because it's the parents that inform teachers. For example, letting teachers know what the child's interests are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes teachers can tell the parents that, oh, your child seems interested in this, but it would be beneficial for the child if parents could collaborate with schools.
Right, right. All right, so we're going to get to, you know, the role of the family, the responsibility of the family and the parents and all of that, apart from the educator mm-hmm. themselves. But what role would you say early childhood education plays in social emotional development?
So think of an only child.
Mm-hmm.
At home by themselves, just surrounded by adults. They're not really going to grow in the way that we'd want them to. They need to be around their peers,
mm-hmm.
learning how to develop and express emotions mm-hmm. in an acceptable or in a sociable manner.
Okay.
And emotional development does not happen in a vacuum. They have to be around other people, and the best people are their peers.
Right.
So that's what early childhood offers.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about something now. You know, the way that we teach children, whether that's in an academic setting or it's something like Sabbath school or Sunday school for those who are not mm-hmm. religious, the fact that, you know, there's mm-hmm. always these bright colors, there's a lot of singing and playing that is brought into the learning and the teaching. I'm just curious, can a child still learn if they didn't have all of that? If you just teach them the way that you would teach, you know, a seventh grader or a 10th grader, just give them the information that they need, whether it's about Jesus or it's about, you know, life and numbers and science and things like that. If you taught a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old without all of those extras, would that still work?
Absolutely, yes. Because think of parents in olden day, parents who had nothing flashy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you have a loving parent or a loving carer, the child can learn.
Okay.
Old children, I want to believe children are emotional learners. So if a child is happy, they can learn. Well, it would be pointless to have all the amazing toys you can find or educational material, but without the love, you know, so they would still learn. They'll still learn. As long as they have a loving adult with them, they'll still learn.
I love that. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. But I suppose that the bright colors and the singing and the play makes it more interesting, obviously.
Oh, definitely, because with all learning in early childhood is play-based. Mm. It's all learning in early childhood is play-based because that's how children learn. They're always playing. That's why when they're learning how to speak, it's through language games. And when we talk to our own babies, we use different voices because it's all play-based. So it's the play-based aspect above the colors and the toys. So it's the songs, the voices, and just being happy, just making learning fun.
Yeah.
It's not about what you have. Yeah.
That's so funny. When I walk into a room and I've got my three kids there, I have a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old, and then I've got a little boy who's 4. If I walk in, depending on what voice I use to say, "Hi, baby," they know who I'm talking to.
Oh, wow.
See? Yeah, obviously. I'm like, I didn't say anyone's name. How do you know I'm talking to him? They're like, no, the voice you used, you know it's him.
See, exactly. Yes, you're spot on.
But who told these people that we also don't want games and bright colors in our offices? I hope management is listening right now. Let's have a little play area. Let's have some bright colors. Let's liven up this place.
Yes, to unwind. That's so true. That's so true. The problem is adults stop playing, and this is why they become so tense. Play
so
should
grumpy,
not stop.
So grumpy. Play should never stop. But anyway, so coming mm-hmm. back to the family's role in supporting a child's early childhood development, it's not just the responsibility of the educator, like you said. What else can families do other than just, you know, observing, keeping an eye out on the interests and things like that? What can families do to be more involved, to be more supportive in the development of the child?
All right. I'll start with creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's support children when they want to draw, color, and listening to them, praising them. I know we were kind of taught to be a bit critical with our children, but I think we need to praise them a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
That way they're not confused about who they should be. They first find that love and acceptance from the home environment before they get into a school environment. And looking at social emotional development, there's something called the zones of regulation. If parents can also teach that to their children before they get to school, level or age,
mm-hmm.
it's a nice way of teaching children to identify what they are feeling and learning the coping mechanisms, for example, mindfulness, breathing, exercising,
mm-hmm.
Breathing exercises which strengthen self-control. So, for example, if a child can identify that, I'm feeling a bit sad, then you help them figure out what to do. It just gives them a step ahead before they get into a school situation. Mm-hmm. And also reading books like there's a DK book called My Mixed Emotions.
Okay.
It just explores all the emotions, and it just helps a child. But sometimes children don't know what they're feeling. You know, when they're throwing tantrums, they can't exactly identify what's happening in them.
True.
So if parents can support them in that manner, it helps them. It helps them And then looking at cognitive development, just reading books together, discussing, asking open-ended questions. As you said, we're sometimes too busy. But I think if we could make time, even I think if it's just 30 minutes a day where we're intentionally spending time with the child, doing what the child wants to do, that adds up, that fills up the child's cup. And looking at physical development, just the little things, ensuring that if a child can do something, let's let them do it. So if a two-year-old says, I want to put on my own shoes, let's be patient and let them do it just to strengthen their fingers.
Wow.
You know, it's the little things that add up.
Right. So basically just budget an extra 30 minutes to whatever it was you were planning to do after the shoes are on.
Yes.
All right. And then the other aspect of a child's development, we talked about the cognitive, the social, emotional. What about the physical development? Does early childhood education contribute in any way to that?
Yes. So some years back, I was in KZN and we had children. I'm not going to say which country they were coming from.
Okay.
But they couldn't even hold a pencil or crayons. And
wow.
And someone was like, oh, it's because their grannies do everything for them. So this is a preschool going child and this child could not color. And it's because granny would do everything for this child. So early childhood exposes children to painting. So you use a different set of muscles when you're holding a paintbrush, when you're using crayons, when you're playing with other children, when you're manipulating Lego, you know. So fine motor skills, and gross motor skills when they're playing outdoors with their friends. Running is good for them. It's exercise. You know how we get endorphins when we walk? Think of the children constantly getting endorphins and exercise at the same time when they're climbing on frames. It's all exercise and good for their mind. It's good for their bodies as well.
Beautiful. And then what would you say are some of the challenges that might be facing early childhood education?
Wow. So at the top of my list, I'd say parental engagement. So sometimes schools struggle to try and get input from parents. Parents are just not available. And sometimes it's the parents with the children that need to talk to the teachers that are not available. Like I said, the collaboration between school and home is very essential for the child and just for the child to also know that school is important. And sometimes some parents don't see the value. No, they don't. And it's just, and it could be because of, you know, backgrounds. People that come from lower socioeconomical backgrounds may not see the value of early childhood education and their lives. So I'll go on to just say money, because money talks. Quality education is often only available to those that can afford the best teachers or the best equipment. So yeah, money would be the second thing. So parental engagement, number one, then money is the second thing. The richer you are, the better education you can access. You can access the qualified teachers as opposed to those that will ruin your child.
Tell me about it.
So, yeah. And then looking at, you know, majority of the world is not rich. Something that we often forget. So quality teachers need to bring in teacher-informed methods, you know, to help a child who's come from a home that is violence or whatever trauma they've gone through. They need someone with care, love, and understanding to deal with that family, because it's not just the child, but just the family as well, in supporting and understanding them. So yeah, for today, I'll leave it at those two, parental engagement and just the money issue.
That makes a whole lot of sense, especially because we're talking about children at a very young age who, like you said, sometimes struggle to express themselves. And so if you have educators or staff who are not qualified, who are not educated, who might get snappy or get frustrated because they don't understand a child who's failing to express themselves, or vice versa, the parents themselves don't understand why the child is so fussy and doesn't want to go to school. Meanwhile, something's happening at school that the child can't express, can't explain. And there's so much frustration. So very interesting points that you've raised there. And how would you conclude the subject? What are some of the key points that you want to make sure that all our listeners take away from this conversation regarding the importance of early childhood education?
As usual, I always say the parents are the best teachers. If we cannot send our children to the best schools, we can do the job ourselves. We are the best. No one can replace the child's home environment, provided it's a safe environment. Sure. No one can replace the parents' love. And then early childhood education is important. It's, research is showing that children who receive early childhood education have benefits for life. They've learned the foundational skills that they'll use in life. For example, like I was saying, the skills of regulating themselves, those are skills they can use in adulthood, you know. So it's essential. It's important. I know for many years, people thought, oh, it doesn't matter. Yes. Early childhood teachers don't even need to be paid much. They actually need to be paid well because they're doing a very good job and they can help young children believe that they can learn. You want a qualified professional that can help your child build their self-esteem and become, because no one is born dumb, but a good teacher can use growth mindset and help a child feel like, yes, I can do this. Every child can do some things. Yeah, early childhood education is important.
Beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much, Taisai, for coming through and for sharing your insights, your knowledge on the subject. Always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.